Thank you very much for joining us here on this second hour of the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, and Cal Carson in studios. And we're getting you folks lined up for our conversations with you. And that number to call, by the way, is 800-859-0957. Toll free. Come on in, get yourself lined up, and we'll get to your calls in just a moment. Before we do that, Gary, this is something that has to do with your neck of the woods, an application that you made us aware of that's available in the city of Ann Arbor.
I am so glad I haven't had to use this resource online this year.
Yes.
I have to tell you that I'm a little concerned about us even talking about it without knocking on wood or something. But this is a great resource, a great online resource that the city of Ann Arbor is really using to help our residents. And here to talk to us a little bit about it is Dave Wilburn and Russ Hanchu. Dave and Russ.
Thank you for joining us, guys.
Welcome.
Hi, guys.
Hey, tell us a little bit about this kind of unique
snowplow application.
Yeah.
Well, we just recently implemented it, and it's basically uses AVL, GPS technology, and mobile broadband, and Garmin mobile data terminals inside the vehicles and the snowplows to basically map snowplow activity throughout the city.
So if people, for instance, go to our homepage, internetadvisor.net, they'll find a link then to the webpage that you folks have set up where, when it's snowing and you guys have got the plows out, your trucks have been equipped so that citizens in Ann Arbor will be able to watch where the snow plows are as they're actually plowing the streets.
Yep, that's correct.
So I can go online, figure out when they're likely to plow my driveway back in. If I go out and shovel my driveway, I know exactly when they're going to come past. It's 15 minutes after I get done plowing my driveway, and they plow it back in again. So I'll be able to tell?
Well, yes, you will.
So, pretty close.
Well, it still won't help. I'll still have to go out and shovel it again, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, well, we haven't had a whole lot of snow here year, so we have had a couple of instances this year where we had some small snow events and also some freezing rain and that, and so the system's been up and functioning since mid late summer on some of the vehicles.
Mm.
And the neat thing is that this is it's an application and it's a system that we can use year round because a lot of these vehicles are not only used for snow plowing, but they're also used for maintenance activities throughout the year.
Now, Ed, when I sent this link around earlier in the week saying that we should do this, I really liked your response.
Well, I thought, this is great. I mean, if not only I could figure out when I'm going to be plowed in or plowed out, but I mean, in the summertime, you can use this to track ice cream trucks.
I think it's a great use for that season.
So, Dave and Rush, you could sell the technology to the local ice cream trucks.
Yes, well, maybe not the ice cream trucks, but we do have quite a big fleet of other trucks, that, including solid waste and vehicles like that, where people like to know exactly where those people are because they're providing a service individuals, and they can have an idea of exactly where those people, where our staff is at any particular time.
Now, we get a chuckle out of this, and it's kind of a nice to have if you're a resident of Ann Arbor or any other city who catches this, but why would the city go to the expense of developing the software and paying you guys to implement it? I mean, it's, you're not doing it for grins.
No, we're not. Primarily, though, what you aren't seeing on the public-facing side is the internal side. There's a quite a hefty piece of software going on the inside, which we use for a lot of reporting and tracking and deployment of our fleet. One of the benefits of the site that we put up is it allows it to be public as well as an internal application.
So this
we're
is
using
yeah,
it
right.
We're using it for maintaining and basically being more efficient with the work that we're trying to do. But coupling that with providing some transparency and allowing the public to see exactly what we're trying to do as well.
Cal?
No, I'm not an Ann Arbor resident, thank God. But no, I'm just kidding.
That was a shot at me.
But in all seriousness, Have you thought about expanding this maybe to the bus system? It would be really cool to be sitting in my house, being able to say, hey, that bus is about two blocks away, and then in inclement weather, I could just walk out the door and be right there
that
when it comes
marvelous.
Up.
That would be marvelous, yeah.
Yeah, actually, the Ann Arbor Transportation Authority has a similar system. It uses a little different technology, and they do have a similar solution. It's not the same as this one. We actually entertained that idea, and we went this route because this is a little bit more modern, and it's state of the art.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very accurate as well.
How long did it take to develop this, by the way, Russ or Dave?
Well, that's a good question. It's we didn't necessarily develop all the specific technology. We hired a vendor who specializes in this.
Ah, I gotcha.
So you know, we brought them in, and they worked directly with us to on our requirements and such.
You know, we got a bunch of young people in the studio with us who are part of the Rush 27, the first robotics team, and I think one of them is a coder. He's probably got some ideas already about the ice cream trucks and anything else. Maybe, Cameron, you want to help with that, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, we'd love to have any kind of help.
Hey, listen, congratulations, Dave. Dave Wilburn of Rush Hanshu and the City of Ann Arbor for getting this application out on snow plows. Ed, ice cream trucks is going to have to come in a little bit. Thanks, guys,
okay,
for joining
right,
us.
Thank you very much.
Hey, back in just a moment for more of your questions. 800-859-0957.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. For help with any computer problem, call in during our live show or visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Thank you very much for repeating that phone number for us, and let's get to some folks who have used that phone number and are online with us. Let's start answering some questions, beginning with Ruth in Westland. Ruth, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How may we help you?
Well, when I was getting ready to scan my hard drive for viruses, mm-hmm. I closed all the programs, mm-hmm. but then I discovered that there were certain processes that weren't necessary for the system to run. Mm-hmm. There were some processes like Evernote, mm-hmm. which allows you to clip articles.
Yep,
from,
yep. I use it myself.
Anyway, the bottom line is my question is it important to close any unnecessary processes as well as closing the applications before you scan the hard drive for viruses?
Very good question, guys. It's a very good question.
Well, no, it depends how fast you want it to get done and how much room space they're taking up in memory. The first thing an antivirus program does is it scans active memory and all programs that are loaded in memory to make sure those are safe, and then it scans your hard drive. And it'll use as much memory is a silicon memory is available on your computer, and the more memory you have available, the faster the disk, the virus scan will complete.
That's RAM. That would be RAM.
The RAM, right.
RAM memory. Mm-hmm.
So, no, it's not necessary to close them all down.
And most people don't.
And most people don't. But there's people that have gamed on their computers and really want the maximum performance of their computer. They regularly close and know which programs are not necessary to be running in the background. Like, do you really need to have Acrobat preloaded on your computer so you can read PDF files? Do you really need to have Evernote on there and stuff? No, I want to play a game and I want the fastest performance. So they'll regularly close those.
And Ed, a lot of times people, they're not thinking. They say when they're loading a program, it says, do you want this to start up in the start menu?
Right.
And they say, yes, why not? Well, there's a good reason why not. You don't need Evernote running unless you're going to use Evernote, right?
Ruth, this is also why we tell people at times, Cal, to go into MS Config on a PC, for instance. And under MS Config, that's all the programs that get start running, as Gary said, that have permission to run immediately when you boot up. You can get rid of a lot of those. As Ed said, for instance, you don't need to have your PDF reader running right away. Yeah. It'll light up whenever you open up a PDF or click on it.
Yeah, because you don't use that all the time.
Yeah, but
only have it load when you need it.
Right, but then again, I like Snagit loading all the time because when I hit the print screen button, I'd like to be able to grab a snapshot of or a portion of the screen.
Good point.
And I mean, that's a utility that I find indispensable, just like Evernote would be to someone else.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so
you have to be very
selective. Because you use that all the time.
Yes.
You want that loaded.
Any
some other
Carol?
Things you're not.
If the scanning for virus has been very, very slow for you, it makes sense to turn all that stuff off. But, you know, I've got a bunch of things that start up on my Windows machine that I use, and I never turn them off because the virus scan just works. I'm fine with it, and it's not getting in my way of anything. So if it's really not inconveniencing you don't bother working, you know, turning those things off. If it's the inconvenience or if it's slowing it down and making it less performance, as Ed has said, then, yeah, go through and shut down the ones that you don't want to use.
Give you a hand, Bruce? Does it help?
Oh, yes, very much. One other thing that just occurred to me. I was trying to open a program, and it was said it was already open, but there was no icon on my taskbar. So I went into the task manager and looked at the processes, and sure enough, the process was running, but you wouldn't know that the program was open if you looked at my taskbar.
Yeah, right, right.
Mm-hmm. What causes that, and is there any, and it doesn't do it all the time. You know, sometimes it runs normally, and the icon's there, and you know it's open.
Ed, and that's the $50,000 question. Could it be? Because we have that problem at work sometimes, you know, either running Lotus Notes or even Outlook. If you close Outlook and then, oh, I forgot to get that one piece of email, and then you start Outlook back up, it'll say, you know,
still running.
Still running, and sometimes it can actually hang. And you can have two or three Outlook processes running simultaneously. Yeah. It just, the program's hanging. Is that,
you know, the one
experience
that I have trouble with is Firefox. I'll close out of Firefox, and I'll go back 2 days later. And if I haven't shut off my machine, which I don't, it'll come back and it'll say Firefox still running. I'm going, it's still running from when?
So well, I don't know. I don't know if there's anything you can do about that, guys.
I mean, what has happened to me before, and because I'm not, I don't really pay a lot of attention when I'm using my Windows machine, is that little bar down on the bottom that you can expand.
Yes.
Sometimes it's still in there running, but the bar is compressed, and I can't see the icon running.
That's another point. It's down on the launch bar, the quick launch bar, I think it's called, on the Windows machine. It's down on the bottom right, I think.
Uh-huh.
And, for instance, if you have Synaptics, which is the software that controls the mouse pad that you have, or your mouse, it's running in the backgrounds. You could have an icon pop up, but in most cases, I just tell them, no, don't appear,
right,
or I
right.
just don't expand that launch bar in the bottom. So I hope that answers your questions too, Ruth. Thanks so much for being with us. Let's move on and let's talk with John from Jackson. Hey, John, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you guys?
Good. Thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
First off, I want to tell you, your first hour was fantastic.
Yeah, those guys were wonderful.
Oh, man, what an eclectic, interesting hour that was.
Good, thank you.
Okay, quick question.
Yes.
PDF reader. I'm running Windows XP Pro and 7. Is there just a simple PDF reader out there? Almost all of the stuff that's available now is bloatware.
Yeah, well, you know,
that's a good point.
Yeah,
you're talking about Adobe in particular. Yes,
yes.
And that's how actually, I've never used Adobe.
Oh, really? Oh,
but even Foxit.
I was going to say Foxit
become bloatware.
Well, you know, and that may be more than Adobe, because Adobe has other ways of making money, and that's really what happens. Is because they can make it free. The only way they can pay for it is through some sort of partnership with somebody that's going to load something on your computer or some other way of advertising. And I think Adobe probably does it the least because it makes money so many other ways.
Well, how about he's asking about a lightweight. Does anybody know of a lightweight Adobe?
Well, there's
a
bunch of them out there. I mean, he could, you know, Foxit was one of them. There's one called PDF Exchange Viewer, which I've used before. And then there's one that's really, really small. It's called Cool PDF Reader.
And that's Cool PDF Reader.
Cool PDF Reader.
Okay, that's COOL.
That's right.
Okay, I'll check it out.
Take a look at that one. That might be, you know, light enough weight for you that you want, where you can just, you know, take a look at what you need to look at, but not chew up a bunch of resources.
Yeah, basically all I want to do is read some instruction manuals that come with some downloads.
They come in that, instead of you using an RTF README file, they put PDFs in there, and that makes them a little easier to work with.
Yep. But,
all right, there's some good suggestions in there for you, John, and thank you so much
for
listening.
Okay, I appreciate it.
Appreciate your kudos, too, on the first hour of our programming. Guys, we've got Tom from Dexter and Joe from Livonia out there, and phone lines open at 800-859-0957. We'll be getting back to those in just a moment. Cal, you were talking in exchange during the week about the problems with email messages and text messages sometimes being misunderstood because they're so two-dimensional. And I thought you you make some interesting points about that.
Well, here's what. This week I got involved in an exchange on the web in a blog, and I think I got misinterpreted. And part of it is because when you're texting, and the young folks that are sitting in the studio probably know better than I do because they probably do it more than I ever will in my entire life. Being able to transmit emotions. How do you transmit emotions back and forth so that people don't get the wrong impression?
Especially if you're a wisecracker like you are.
Well, occasionally I put the wrong emphasis on the right syllable, but that's a different story. But yeah, you know, to be able to make sure that message comes across the right way so people don't take it the wrong way. I mean, I actually left a question mark off the end of a sentence. The whole feeling went an entirely different direction.
Oh, wow. And you got, I think, bombed because of it in the particular blog you're on. Well, how do you handle that? How do you show that emotions?
And I think people use emoticons, right?
Exactly.
You know, smiley faces, frowny faces.
Or like LOL.
LOL, laughing out loud, right?
Yeah.
Suppose you don't have that available.
I don't know why you wouldn't.
Why wouldn't you have that?
Well, some text packages don't have the emoticons in there.
Well, but they still have the colon dash...
I got to say this, guys, before we break. Our young member of the team here, Eric, says, pick up the phone and call.
Yeah.
Wait a minute.
What do you know?
We're that generation, not you. Back in just a moment for more of your questions, 800-859-0957. Get in line. We'll get to you in just a moment.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor.
Welcome back to this second hour of the Internet Advisor. By the way, if you're calling in here, we're going to have another full hour after this one for your questions. So please do join us at 800-859-0957. No, the sand is not running out in your particular hourglass if you're listening to us while we're on the air here. So please do join us. And by the way, the only dumb question is the one you don't ask. Sometimes the most basic questions are the best ones because that's the questions that lots of folks have.
And it does allow us to answer a question for other people that have
the same
problem.
Exactly. So 800-859-0957. I might also say, we also get some great answers from folks out there who have experienced the same thing and sometimes can say, hey, guys, you missed this. You could do that. And we'd love to hear from those folks as well.
Absolutely. We have not made every single mistake there is to make.
Close to it.
We have, between all of us, probably close.
I have my cup of tea on the other side of the counter from my
laptop. See, I maintain that was when you dumped tea on your other PC, on your other laptop so you could get a brand new one. I'm not so sure that was accidental. But who would ever accuse you of that?
Oh, dear.
Is that what they call a liquid upgrade?
Yes, that's right. Exactly what it was. That's exactly it. Tom from Dexter, welcome to the Internet Advisor. How may we help you, sir?
Hi. Good afternoon today.
Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Here's what I have. I have a laptop with Windows Ultimate on it, and I have a desktop with Windows Pro on it.
You're talking about Windows 7 and Windows XP, right?
XP Pro, yeah. And the printer is attached to XP directly, and I have a network. And when I look at my network, I can see the... printer. I can see the other computer from the laptop, but I couldn't print to it. Now I Googled it, and How to Geek or something came up with some method, and you have to find the exact name of your computer and the exact name of your printer, and I put those in, and it printed once, and then I turned off my laptop, and the next time I turned it on, it wouldn't print to it. And I just wondered if there's some kind of workaround besides buying a wireless, because I don't print very much, and it would take me.
Oh, these are hard. These are hardwired. These are Ethernet cabled.
Well,
no, they're not.
The laptop is wireless.
Oh, okay.
But the
printer is
connected to his XP.
To the XP,
right.
And then of course I go through the router on the network.
Okay, so you cannot print from the laptop.
Right.
Okay, so that's where you have the problem.
Yeah, through the XP desktop machine to the printer, which is connected to
the
XP
desktop.
And the laptop
is running Windows 7 Ultimate.
Right.
Okay.
And I can go over there and print if I plug it in with
yes,
no problem.
Right. Right. So, right, it's okay, I got you. Okay.
Well, I mean, it sounds like he's done everything I have would have done. I mean, How To Geeks has some great how-to articles, and it sounds like, have you tried to manually create, instead of scanning for the printer, that you manually go and on your Windows 7 machine and say, here's the printer, and let me define the port instead of doing it, and you put the /, and your PC name with another /, and the printer name. So you're instead of scanning for it, you're actually specifying the network path, the universal UNC, Universal Naming Convention, name of the printer, which is the workstation name and the printer name. And then afterwards, it'll ask you to specify the driver you'd like to use for that printer. Now, have you tried that manual method? Because have you go through the network neighborhood and, you know.
Well, I went in and added a port
right.
with those names in it.
Oh, excellent.
And I don't know if that was the time it printed. That was quite a while ago that
Oh, so it did work at some point, and then it fails.
Right. And then, but the other problem is, because it uses a virtual port, and then when you go back to it to print, when it didn't work, and I went back to print and plug it in, I had to figure out, because there was about 8 ports listed there for some reason, I had to figure out exactly
which one
go back to do it just direct wired.
Sometimes
but
you...
Is that what you're suggesting, is go back and...
Well, no, it sounds like you've done everything, and I would have, and I've had a hard time getting this to work, especially with USB printers. If it was an LPT printer, is it an LPT or a parallel printer, or is it a USB printer?
It's USB. I actually had a Windows 1120C that I had connected to it also, and I had trouble with that too. I couldn't print to that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I actually upgraded my printer. I had such difficult time cross platforms like this and cross generations. Microsoft says it'll work. People have developed tools and your tutorials say it works. I just went IP printing. I tell you the truth.
That's what I do too. But, you know, helpdeskgeek.com has a really good...
Helpdeskgeek?
Helpdeskgeek. It's a really good step-by-step, shows you the actual screens. The other one that... and we've used this for other things, which is tomshardware.com. Also has a very good tutorial on how to do exactly what you're trying to do.
Yep.
But I agree with that. You know, what you did should work.
Guys, one thing I haven't heard mentioned yet, have you tried just uninstalling that printer from your machine and then rebooting the machine and then trying to reinstall the computer?
Yeah, that's what HelpDeskGeek suggests.
Oh.
And then add the port at that time.
Hmm. Well, let me ask you this. If I go ahead and say, for example, delete all the ports that are on there.
Uh-huh.
And then I wouldn't necessarily have to probably delete the printer off of that.
Yeah.
And then when it reinstalls, it should only show one port.
Right.
Now when I go and plug in my laptop to that, I wouldn't have to delete the printer off my laptop and reinstall it, would I?
You should.
Because if I only had 2 ports and I tried it and put the correct names in, then I could probably switch between the two, whether I was... if it didn't work one time, I could go in and just plug it in.
See, you could see your XP box, right? From your laptop.
I can see it. I can access the hard drive and everything.
So the problem is not between the laptop over the wireless, the router, out to the desktop. The problem is from the desktop to the printer.
Right.
And that's the port.
And Microsoft's always had problems with that.
And deleting that port, though, might work.
Might bring it back. There used to be a utility that I used years ago, but then they went from freeware to Try Me Out, and it was called Printer Magic. And what it did is it installed a little utility that on your computer, on both computers, it's probably not even Windows 7 compliant anymore, but it just eliminated Microsoft out of the picture, and it created its own little data packets out there, and if they were running, it would just print. And I wish there may be another utility like that.
And we didn't need that because Microsoft came up with a solution, but it's failing. It's failing Tom right now, right?
Right.
So maybe go back to,
they're not really that backwardly compatible. I think that's part of the problem.
Oh, is that it?
Yeah.
You probably have better luck going from having an XP system trying to access a Win 7 system, but that isn't the way you're set up. You know, for $50, you could on sale, like a Tiger Direct, I see wireless printers all the time. For $50 to $75.
Keep your other one for your XP box. And, it's just just a little bit bigger footprint than, because you have 2 printers sitting on the credenza.
And the biggest cost all the time is the ink.
You know, there's one other
thing. It dries out if you don't, you know, use
that's
it.
Right. That's right.
That's yeah. It is a problem, yeah.
There's one other possibility you might want to do, too. If you don't want to go out and buy a wireless printer because you got 10,000 cartridges and you want to make sure you use them up, you can also buy a router that has a USB port on it.
You can plug the printer into the router,
and everybody in the house can print to it. And you don't have to have a computer up for you to be able to do it.
That might be a good choice because I have a Belkin router, and it always loses connection with my modem.
Well, then this might be the time to do that.
U.S. Robotics makes one. It has a print server built right into it.
Yep.
Oh,
but,
sweet.
But for how much?
It's about $75.
And you can buy a new printer for $75.
That sounds like a good choice. So U.S. Robotics, you said?
Yeah. U.S. Robotics. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, good.
Especially if you have a high-end printer that you want to keep working, it is an excellent choice. Thank you, Cal.
And you've got a whole bunch of cartridges around as well, which is a big investment, you know. You got a backup set of cartridges. That could be a significant amount of money that's invested there. Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call.
Appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
You guys.
Yes, I know it got a little complicated there, folks. We took a little more time, but it was precisely because I think there's some issues in there that other people may be running into as well. And your solution, Cal, in particular, explain that a little bit more for folks about the router that has a print server in it.
Yeah, U.S. Robotics makes a router just like you would have for any other wireless router that you have in your house.
And so does Linksys and D-Link and Netgear. They each one of them make it, but yes.
Yeah, and so, for example, on the back of the router, in addition to those four ports that you can plug wired connections into, it also has a fifth port that is a USB connection. You plug your USB cable into the back of the router. The other end plugs into the back of the printer. And then you bring up your browser in, on your laptop or your desktop, and you go into the router's interface, and you say, hey, I have a printer, and it's going to be on this port on the router. And the router says, okay, great. And anytime anybody wants to print to it, they just have to point to this device. And then you just set up your
computer.
How does
it show up then, for instance, when I add a printer?
Well, you know, U.S. Robotics or D-Link, they also provide CDs that help that you install on the PC to make it easier to discover this new wireless printer.
Exactly. He's exactly right on that one.
Gotcha. So you get a little help from the company then to find it when you're out there.
Yes.
I want to take a little time to do that, folks, because I think this is a solution that may be for a lot of people out there who are having a problem with printing, etc. Okay, here's the phone number again, folks. 800-859-0957. And there's plenty of room for your call as well. 800-859-0957. Back to answer more of your calls at this hour in just a moment with the Internet Advisor.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor.
Thank you so much for joining us on the Internet Advisor. And for those of you who can, we're going to be on for another full hour. So lots of time to get your questions answered. Please do get to a phone and join us at 800-859-0957. And don't forget, by the way, InternetAdvisor.net is our homepage, and on there you'll find show notes that will connect you with all of our guests we had during our first hour, a great first hour, and the young folks, for instance, from the Clarkson Schools and their first robotic program, and should be a lot of fun.
And don't forget our forums out there, so that if you can't get your call in because you're driving right now and you can't dial your phone, feel free to go to our forum, submit that question, and we'll get back to you one way or the other.
And you get that through our homepage again, InternetAdvisor.net. All right, let's go back out to our listeners and say hello to Ed from St. Clair Shores. Hi, Ed. How you doing?
Great. How are you?
Good. Both hands on the wheel, and what can we do for you?
I want to know if I can download something that will allow me to open up pictures. I'm looking for an automobile, and some pictures are image pictures, or I think it's IMG, or they don't open up. I can't open them up.
Okay, you're getting some images. Now, what computer or what are you looking at these pictures on?
Either eBay or Craigslist.
But, I mean, what is the computer you're using to see them?
Oh, I'm sorry. I got a Dell.
Okay.
And I've got Windows XP.
Okay, good. So it's a Dell Windows XP, and you're having problems because when you're on these sites, maybe eBay or one of those other ones, you get an image of a vehicle coming up, and it's got an extension that doesn't allow you to open it up, right?
Correct.
Okay, so guys, what are some viewers he could get that might help him?
Well, it should have been able to handle IMGs. So what's probably happened is something's in the operating system is damaged, doesn't know what application to use. IrfanView would probably be something simple that you could download, and it would allow the ability to register tell Windows that I am capable of viewing IMG files.
Have you ever heard of that before, IrfanView?
But the
yes.
Okay.
Pardon me, Ed, did you say yes?
Yes, I did.
Okay,
so
it's a
download that.
Yeah, it's a free, by the way, folks, it's free. It's one of those wonderful free PC applications that you can use to see just about any image ever created. And this, it was invented by a guy named Erfen, who was the guy who did that, and a young man, I think, from Austria, I believe. But anyway, the point is it's free, and you can see any image out there with it on a PC.
The other thing I was thinking of is, you know, I would think that Quicken, which automatically has an Internet Explorer plugin, you know, would if
me Quick?
Yeah, Quicken. I'm sorry, not Quicken.
No, I think
QuickTime.
QuickTime.
QuickTime Viewer. Sorry.
QuickTime Viewer.
Yeah, so you might, maybe that's damaged, or maybe it needs to be uninstalled and then possibly reinstalled so that it can re-register those files. Cal, what do you think?
That's a good thought. That's not a bad idea. Also, there's one other free one that I've used before in a long time ago, but I haven't used lately. It's called Easy Graphic Converter. And do a Google search on that. It's free, and you can download that. It's made by a company called eTrueSoft.
And Ed, you got one more?
Yeah, well, the other thing I was thinking of, if you have some certain CD-ROM burning software or DVD burning software, you have to remember that the image file that you're looking at ends in IMG, right? Well, some CD-ROM burning programs actually create DVD images in an IMG or image format. So so it's possible that you have another program that's registered itself that says, I know what to do with, with IMG files. I'm supposed to burn DVDs with those, you know. And so it's
that's
told
it's
Windows,
yeah.
And it's and so Windows doesn't know that an IMG is actually a, an image file.
Yeah.
And so it's not going to display it as an image. Right. So you might want to look into or Google about how to re-register IMG to a graphic program. That's why we're talking about possibly reinstalling QuickTime or EarthView so that it can re-register that this graphics program is responsible
how
for...
About, how about right-clicking on the image and then open with?
That's what I was going to suggest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So download an image or IMG file and right-mouse click and then find a program that that opens it. And then once you do, there's a little checkbox in there that says, always use this program to open up IMG files.
That's why, Cal. You establish the default viewer for that. And that's probably the simplest way to do it, okay?
All right, that's great. Hey, I'm going to hang up, but I had one question. What do you suggest the best virus protector? Then I'm hanging up. I'll listen to it on the radio.
Okay.
Break it up.
Thank you. It's interesting that you asked that question.
I know what Cal's going to say. A Mac.
Oh, man.
No, I wasn't going to go that way. The guy's using a Windows machine, so we got to help him out.
Yeah.
And for me, for the Windows machines that I do use, the best one that I use, and it's free, and I actually got the idea from Ed a long time ago, is AVG. AVG is my favorite to use, and I'm very happy with that program.
Yep. And I like... Oh, go ahead, Foster.
No, you and I were talking about this because, and I'm going to try to post it to our homepage right now. It's one of the news items, or is it under the advice column? Fred Langa from Windows Secrets,
yes,
the newsletter, recently was asked about some of these free. He said, what's the problem with some of these free antivirus programs that hog memory? So, and somebody accused him of promoting Microsoft, the Internet Security Program.
Microsoft Security Essentials.
MSE, Microsoft Security Essentials, which is what I've been promoting, and Ed, you've done it as well. So the person who was writing him said, it's horrible, it's a memory hog. So what Fred did was he ran his own tests, and I'll link to this article. What he found in the end was Microsoft Security Essentials is actually a very, very good one.
Yes.
A very good one. Another one that's out there called ClamV. Matter of fact, I think it's
ClamV.
ClamV.
Yeah, ClamV is fairly new for the PC.
AV.
I think it's AV.
ClamAV, yeah. Because the one for Macs is done by them too, isn't it?
Yes.
And he was saying that the ClamAV is an excellent piece of software to use as well.
Yeah, but Avast and AVG were right up on top
exactly.
there as well.
So the ones he looked at were Microsoft Security Essentials, Avast, Free AV, Avira AV, AVG, Komodo antivirus, and the ClamWin free antivirus.
But there is a caveat. If you're going to use the Microsoft Security Essentials, it works best in Windows 7.
Yes.
It provides you that total protection. And
a
little less in Vista and a lot less in XP, but it does provide protection. But
these are active. Pardon me. The new thing about the Windows Microsoft Security Essentials is it's active, not just passive. It's not just a screen. It actually has some active elements to
it. Right. It's not like the old Defender of the old days.
And how do you deal with the fact, though, that it's harder and harder to find AVG free?
Well, it's harder and harder because they're confusing the links and they're trying to force you to download a trial version that has an expiration date. You're right, it does. That's why I've gone to Avast. And I'm running into the same problem with Malwarebytes. I have a difficult time downloading Malwarebytes because what they're doing is they're redirecting you to CNET, and CNET just plugs up the download page with stuff that they're promoting at CNET, of course. And you have a difficult time throughout, you know, finding
now, there's a
the
business
correct
sense, as Gary, you've said before. The business sense is they got to pay the rent.
If they don't do this, then it's not available to any of us.
Yeah,
we could always go to FileZilla. Oh, I'm sorry, they were just taken off the internet, weren't they?
You know, the point is,
no torrent sites.
Somehow they have to pay the rent, and if they don't charge the users, they do make it free for us, but they're asking us and trying to make us use some of their partners. And if we don't want to, we don't have to.
Well, they
but it does make it a little more difficult to find the free version.
I have found it's easier to find the free version of AVG if you search for free AVG as opposed to just searching for AVG.
Well, we should say Ed has got a link to it in this toolbox.
Yeah. Yes. And I have found that it's easier to search for the free version than it is to go out and make the money to pay for the paid version. So that's just what I found.
Ed, why don't we tell them how to get hold of your toolkit?
Go to internetadvisor.net. On the top page, we have Ed Rudell's toolkit. And click on that, and I have a list of all sorts of freebies out there, antivirus and anti-malware.
And we're constantly updating those links so they actually take you to the free devices. And we'll close out this hour of the Internet Advisor with that. I want to thank Ed, and Cal and Gary for being here with us. And for those of you who can, stay with us because we have another hour of answering your questions here on the Internet Advisor. Here's the magic number for you, 800-859-0957. Get on the phone, get it with us, and we'll be round ready to answer your question when we come back after this break. That's 800-859-0957. The Internet Advisor is on the air for you.
You're listening to a podcast of WJR's Internet Advisor. For help with any computer problem, call in during our live show or visit our webpage at internetadvisor.net.
Welcome back to hour number three of the Internet Advisor on the Great Voice of the Great Lakes, WJR. Glad to be with you guys, by the way. And you get the bonus round. That is, right now we have another full hour of answering your questions at 800-859-0957. So if you've been kind of meandering along and saying, boy, I'd like to ask him about this. Oh, but there's not enough time. Yeah, there is now. You've got the rest of this hour to give us a call. 800-859-0957. Guys, let's dive right back into our calls and say hello to Chuck from St. Clair Shores. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, how you doing? I enjoy your program. It's great.
Thank you.
I wonder how you can solve this problem. I try to order some over the internet with a company, and it's state specific. So they have a map of the United States, and I hit Michigan, and it just locks. It doesn't proceed to the end there. And I call them up, and they say that not a problem. We'll send you a link. Well, a link is a replication of what I already have. That's the same thing. I hit that link, and I tried to check my pop-up. The pop-up that's coming is not in effect, and the flash drive. I checked that, and do you know of any kind of situation that I can get through there?
Now, what browser, first of all, what is your operating system?
Windows 7.
Windows 7, okay. And what browser are you using to go to these sites?
It'd be Google.
You're using
the Chrome?
Chrome?
Are you using Internet Explorer to get via Google to get there?
Yes.
Okay, so it's Internet Explorer that you're using.
And you are using a particular application or particular website, and you go to that map and you click on Michigan only?
No. Well, there's a map in the United States, and you can pick anyone that's state-specific. I'm looking for the Michigan edition of it. So I hit that, and basically it just locks and doesn't do anything.
Okay.
There's a link at the bottom, and I hit that link to just go to the catalog as opposed to ordering through that little link, and it just freezes.
Oh, so the other links freeze as well.
Yeah, I mean, it might be just a Java issue. The simplest solution to diagnose this would be to download another web browser like Google Chrome or Firefox or even Safari that you can download for the PC and just something else, and then repeat the process going to the web address and then try to place the order that way, because each one of those browsers, Chrome and Firefox, are just as secure when placing online orders as Internet Explorer.
Okay.
And we usually recommend to folks that they have two browsers on their computer. You don't have to use the second one, but it's precisely for moments like this where you say, let me just copy that address, highlight it, right-click on it, copy it, and then open up the new browser, put that in, and see if it has the same problems. If it doesn't have the same problems, shaboom, you fix the problem.
Now, sometimes what this can be is a plug-in within Internet Explorer. You could have, you know, a Yahoo toolbar or a McAfee security bar or something like that, and they're preventing this web site from getting this pop-up because some of those have pop-up blockers in them or they provide additional security, but that's not – it's broken now.
Of course, the other way to test that to see if it is, in fact, that what you're talking about, if he clicks on a different state, does it work?
That's a good point. Have you tried that, Chuck?
No, it doesn't work on anything.
It doesn't work on any other states.
So if it doesn't work on any states at all, then Ed's probably on to something with that one.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, different browser, but yeah, I mean, it's just not Michigan that blows up. Or Haynes. Okay.
Thank you very much.
All right, you're very welcome.
I was trying to
be
funny.
Yeah.
It just didn't go over.
No, it would have been funnier if you would have said you clicked on Ann Arbor and it blew up. Sorry. I did it again.
Ooh, nasty. All right.
There's people in Ann Arbor just throwing rocks at their radio.
800-859-0957. Hey, Joe from Livonia, thank you for waiting there, and welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you, and thank you for taking the call.
Sure, John.
First things first, it's ClamXAV, as in Macintosh OS X operating systems.
ClamXAV is the software?
Yeah.
All right, that's the antivirus software for the Mac.
Originally, that was the way it was designed, yeah, but if I understood you, you're saying there's now a Windows version.
Yes, and that, I believe, was ClamXV, but I'll have to look it up myself.
Now that you mentioned it, I think you may be right.
Yeah, I think that's what I saw in the article.
For Windows, it's called Clam Antivirus or Clam AV.
Yeah, okay. Very good. All right, Joe, what was the other part of your question?
All right, anyway, I've got kind of an unusual situation. I'm running a Mac, running 10.4.11, and I seem to have had one of my email accounts hacked. And I'm not quite sure what or how. Because it didn't take all of the addresses, or at least I'm not getting a daemon on deliverable notification.
Yeah, right.
Mm-hmm. I got three of them in a row all on the same day, and then I got the same addresses again the following day.
Right.
Who's your internet service provider?
Earthlink.
Well, I mean, it may not be that your your email account is hacked. I mean, it's a possibility. That is definitely a possibility if you have a web-based, I mean, because since most mail is now available web-based. But
It's actually a Yahoo account is the one that's gotten hit. It's not the Earthlink account.
Well, okay. The thing is that someone else's computer could have become infected, and their address book was stolen. And remember, then what happens with these types of viruses is that It sends email to everyone on the address, and it randomly selects a person's name in the address book, and it makes it look like it's coming from that person.
Right.
And then it sends another 100, and it sends it to all the users, and it randomly selects another individual in that address book, so it looks like it's coming from that individual.
All right, but what I'm saying is that each of the three notifications have the exact same five email addresses.
And all of those email addresses are in your address book in your Yahoo account.
Yeah, and there's at least 20 addresses in the account.
Well, the first thing you do is you want to go into that account and change your password. In your Yahoo account, your email account, and change your password.
Joe, hang on a second. We're going to go to break, and we'll come back. We'll take another shot at this.